Good morning. It's 8:18. I'm Jonathan Reeves. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. And joining me right now on the phone lines, we're talking to U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. And Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Yes, sir. You bet.
As we start things off, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts. Of course, there's been a lot of news that's been taking place over the past week or so. Of course, a lot of things, a lot of people, you know, having a lot of takeaways from James Comey's testimony that took place on Thursday there in Washington. What's your thoughts on the testimony and kind of how things have been going in relation to this investigation?
I think probably it can be whatever anybody wants it to be. If they use the term Rorschach test. Well, it may be a Rorschach test, depending on your perspective. There's something in there for everyone. I mean, the Democrats might be able to pounce on certain points. Republicans can pounce on certain points. But some of the concerns I have... Really, I kind of question the motivation for why he would deliberately leak, because in his words, he wanted to impact or hopefully create the conditions to appoint a special counsel. Well, you know what? He's the FBI director. If he felt like there needed to be a special counsel, why couldn't he have just asked for one? You know, so why go through all this subterfuge? And the other issue is that's government property. Maybe it's not classified, but you would expect the FBI director to recognize that you should not leak government information to the media. And, of course, you know, there's maybe the insulation there because he didn't leak it to the media. He leaked it to his friend, a Columbia law professor, but he did it with the express purpose of impacting and eventually that becoming a media story. So, same thing. The point is, I kind of now have a different view of the integrity of James Comey given those facts that came to light. Now, I think probably, he thought in his mind that, look, I'll just come and cop to this. I'll do all this, and then I'll come to Washington, because he almost invited himself. It's not as though anybody had to, coerce him into coming and speaking, testifying in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And so I think this was all part of a plan to sort of create some sort of indemnification in the public eye that says, look, he's a forthright guy. He came forward with all this information, and he told us the truth. And so if we told us the truth, he's got to be a good guy. Well, that's subject to debate as well. So this whole episode has sort of cast a new light on at least, my opinion of him and his integrity.
Where do you see this going?
Well, there are a number of things that we can glean from this in terms of where it goes and how fast we get there. Number one, I think there was sufficient information from Comey to indicate that Trump was never a part of the Russian investigation and that there's no evidence of collusion. It's not going to end there, because there's too many folks that are going to go, no, we got to keep going, because they've turned this into a political deal. There's also, in my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, but in my opinion, I don't think there is sufficient cause to bring obstruction charges against President Trump. And there's a whole lot of folks who share that opinion. However, there's also a whole lot of folks who disagree with me on the other side that say, oh, yeah, this is a classic case of obstruction, and they make statements like this is worse than Watergate. Well, again, that's ridiculous, but that's my opinion. And so because we have those kinds of statements swirling around in various channels, then you're probably going to see this continue and don't really know when it's going to end. But I think it could end and should end sooner rather than later. But that's going to require that a lot of these liberal Democrats like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, while they're asking the president to stop tweeting and making incendiary comments, they should do the same thing themselves. And, it's been 7 months since he was elected, and they're going to have to learn to live with the results of that election. There were a whole lot of us that weren't necessarily thrilled about when Barack Obama was elected. But, at some point, you got to grow up and accept the results. And so, that's what we do. So I think it's we're at that point where folks who are, still kind of fomenting this resistance environment, it doesn't serve any purpose. In fact, I wonder what they want. I mean, they don't have any real clear message other than they just hate the president and they want to stand against him.
Let's switch gears and go to something else, because there was something that I want to talk about in relation to Cuba real quick while we have just a few more minutes with you. The Miami Herald's reporting the Trump administration is going to make a Cuba policy announcement Friday in Miami. Tell us about this and what this could mean for relations, especially with maybe Arkansas agriculture and Cuba, something I know that has been a big interest, not just with you, but others who've been in the chair before you.
Well, you know, and before I got elected to Congress, I was an ag broadcaster, a farm broadcaster, ag journalist, and covered this for years. And in fact, I pulled out an episode of 2001 episode of a television show I did back in the day, and same conversation we were having then. We were talking about the Farm Bill, and we were talking about Cuba trade. And so this has been going on a long time, and I've followed it for a long time. And, you know, on the one hand, we're closer than we've ever been to actually affecting a, you know, positive impact on our, you know, farm economy by allowing extension of credit terms, and that's simply what all we're asking for, is that we, you know, treat Cuba, you know, economically with the same standard, or with, you know, the same as we would any other country. You know, I recognize that Cuba is, you know, there's issues there with you know, their military. They're providing asylum to some U.S. Fugitives that should be returned. Those are issues that we can address. But separate and apart from that, you know, we're just asking that, you know, the law says we can sell U.S. ag commodities to Cuba, but it forbids the extension of credit. Well, how is that? I mean, you see what you have there is you can do it, but not really. So what we're trying to do is affect that positively. Now, what President Trump will say this week, not really sure. I've been to the White House twice in the last 3 weeks to address this with his team, and feel like, you know, they recognize the validity of what I'm trying to say. Look, we want to sell U.S. ag commodities. So we feel like this is a reasonable request, and, you know, from a rural perspective, you know, 17 million jobs tied to agriculture. We're at 50% decline in the net farm income, close to 50% over the last 5 years. And this would be a shot in the arm. It's not a silver bullet, but it would certainly help. And so we're hoping that he'll weave our policy into this. And if he does, obviously it's going to require some legislation from us, because he doesn't have the authority to unilaterally make that determination, because it is a statute. So we'll have to take some legislative action, and our bill does that.
Well, one of the things could be that the news, I think, could be that he may be calling for rollback of current restrictions, and that, if that is the case, your thoughts on that?
Well, what I think he wants to do in the short term is to probably reverse most everything that President Obama did, so that he can then move forward under his terms. And I get that, and it's reasonable. In the short term, if he says we're going to limit travel, or we might go back to restricting travel of U.S. citizens to Cuba, that could be a problem. I don't think he's going to close the embassy. I don't think he would even consider that. We're now almost 2 years into an operating embassy there, and I don't think he's going to roll that back. I think he may not completely reverse travel, but he may curtail travel to some degree. And I still think that there's a great possibility that he could look at the sale of ag goods and go, yeah, that makes sense, and rural America needs a little bit of a pick-me-up, understanding, of course, that it's not going to fix all of our problems in rural America, but it would sure help and go a long way to help you know, create a little more, you know, positive cash flow. And so I think that's something to be considered. But there's some other things, obviously, that he's got some concerns about. I mentioned the fugitives. You know, we would like to get those fugitives back in the United States and prosecute them. One of them is a cop killer from New Jersey, and there's a couple others. And so we, you know, I get that completely, and I think those are the kinds of things that he's going to want to hold out for.
One other thing I want to talk about is that, switching gears again, coming up tomorrow, you're going to have about 18 constituents from the state of Arkansas who are part of the Arkansas chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. They're holding their conference in Washington, D.C. They're going to be meeting with the Arkansas congressional delegation. And a lot of these people are concerned about, President Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord and kind of where we go from there by way of environment. I wanted to, kind of talk about that for just a second. Kind of your thoughts on President Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord. And when it comes to environmental issues and some of those concerns that people like the Citizens Climate Lobby have, where do we go from here to be able to protect the environment?
Well, number one, the Paris Accord, President Obama didn't have the authority to commit the United States to the Paris Accord. And so if the president had come back to Congress, because this is what Congress does, they ratify treaties. So this is a non-binding agreement, then what's the point of being part of it? If it is a binding agreement, it was unlawful because it wasn't ratified by Congress. So in either case, that should be the end of the conversation. I'm not going to debate the science of the deal, but I will say this, that what we've seen, and we saw this with the Kyoto Protocol, is that other nations want us to do everything to fix the environment, and they don't want to participate in that at the same level that we do. And if you look at, the emissions in places like India and China, they're not making any strides to try and curtail emissions or to address climate change in their part of the world, but they want us to do it. And I think the reason they want us to do it, quite frankly, is it prevents us from expanding economically as aggressive and growing economically as aggressively as we would like to, and that gives them a competitive edge. I'm not a conspiracy theorist here. This is a fact. They would like us to have to cover more regulatory costs, which has the effect of constricting our economy. That puts them in a better competitive position globally. And so we can look at this thing through the economics. The science of it, I'm not even going to debate that, but I will say that, I'm for clean air, clean water, and the idea that because I'm a Republican that I don't want clean air, clean water is just ridiculous on its face. And there's a whole lot of folks that want to make that assertion that Republicans are against clean water and clean air. That couldn't be further from the truth. But there's a way that we can affect that without it costing our economy and we shouldn't be the only ones on the planet engaged in trying to control emissions.
Right, and the last question I have is, here in Arkansas, what are some of the things that you would like to see by way of how we can, kind of come together to be able to come up with something that would be agreeable for everybody when it comes to this?
Well, you talk about environmental sustainability. First off, the term sustainability is a fairly nebulous term, and it means something different to everyone. But, from the agricultural perspective, sustainability, farmers have been avant-garde in sustainability for years. They just didn't call it that. What is called is good stewardship of the land, because you derive your income from that land, and therefore it's in your interest to make sure that you're taking proper care of the land. And so to somehow malign agriculture, which is what the left routinely does, as the culprits in global warming, is that's unacceptable, because farmers are, the original environmentalists. And what I like to say is, you've got environmental activists, and they're making all these outlandish claims. Meanwhile, you have farmers who are active environmentalists, and that's the difference, is they are very proactive and forthright in implementing strategies of sustainability. So, again, that word means different things to different people, and it's going to be addressed in a different way. But, agricultural producers have always been and always will be good stewards, because they have to be. They derive their income from the land, so it's in their interest to be good stewards. And so what we'll see here in Arkansas is the continuation of that. We'll see farmers adopting new technologies. We have a growing population and shrinking production base, so we have to use technology to affect higher yields and greater production, and they'll do that, and they'll do it in an environmentally sensitive way, as they've done for years, and so that's going to continue.
Thank you so much for your time, Representative Crawford. Have a great day. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. You bet.
Bye-bye. All right. And thank you very much. And you're listening to Morning Edition here on KASU.